Hello, friends. This is a big one. Reba McEntire is here for an hour. The Untold Story of Fancy, her new duet with Dolly Parton. She talked about some of the urban legends about her life, the first time she realized she was famous. I mean, it's Reba-centric, and it's awesome, so I don't want to keep you waiting too long. Here are the five music releases I think you should check out. Natalie Hemby has a new album called Pins and Needles. Here is the title track. Cody Johnson put out Human, the double album. Here's a new song called Treasure. Not all treasure has to shine. When I told you that I wished I could have put a bigger diamond on your band. You said your love's worth more than... Matt Stell has a new song called Boyfriend Season. When you're running out of ways to forget me, and the lights and the night just ain't enough. When you're lying wide awake, can you give me a drunk call? Old Dominion, new album called Time, Tequila, and Therapy. Here's All I Know About Girls. All I know about girls is a wide world ain't gonna spin without them, but it'll spin around them. All I know about girls is you best get out of their way. Shut your damn mouth. And the number one song is from Reba. She released Revived, Remixed, and Revisited, and it includes Does He Love You, a duet with Dolly Parton. But does he love you? Does he love you? Like he loves me. Like he loves me. Does he think of you? Does he think of you? When he's holding me. Those are five new releases to check out. I think we're going to leave it there and get right on to the interview. Thank you, guys. I believe you will enjoy this one. In studio with Reba. At what point did it just turn into just Reba?
Gosh, I think in 94.
Was that a conscious decision by you and your team to go, I want to be an icon, so let's just go with Reba?
Or it was Narvel's idea. Yeah. And I liked it because only when I signed my autograph, I only had to put Reba because I'm lazy.
Now it's kind of weird to hear McEntire.
Yeah, I like it when I'm doing liners and things. I say, hi, I'm Reba McEntire, because that has a cadence for me. But just to do Reba's fine with me, too. I can go with it.
I guess you have to drag out Reba. Hi, I'm Reba. Reba.
Hey, Reba.
Hey, Reba.
Hey, I'm Reba McEntire. It just sounds better to me.
It's funny to see, whenever you look at your career, even today, how relevant you are pop culture-wise today. I'm watching Ted Lasso, and they're like, hey, we left the tickets under Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
And so that itself, and we watched that episode, I think, 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Did you know that was going to be in that show at all?
No, I was sitting there with Riddler, my dog, and I was sitting there watching TV, and Roy Kent, my favorite character of that whole show, comes up and says, I think you're holding a ticket for Reba McEntire. I went, Riddler, did you hear that? I was thrilled to pieces.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Marnie said the same thing. She was sitting there with her dog, Cooper, so it was fun.
The same kind of thing, because I'm on TikTok a lot when, you know, I'm a survivor. And it's everybody doing, like, their little household things. You know, someone, you know, throws away the trash. So that became, and it still is a huge, you know, TikTok trend. Did that come out of nowhere for you, too? And did someone come up and go, Reba, all of a sudden this song is massive on TikTok?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Justin was the one. He sent it over to me, Justin McIntosh. And he said, look at this. Look what's going on. And I said, well, that's pretty cool. I said, these kids weren't even born probably when it was out the first time. And he said, we need to do one. So we did, and then it just got bigger and bigger. Very flattering.
It's for a few weeks, it was the thing that I had seen the most. Now what's odd is that Neon Moon is having its minute TikTok too now.
Good. Where
Ronnie texts me and goes, hey, what's happening here? And I was like, what do you mean what's happening? I don't know the guy that runs TikTok.
Yeah.
He was like, our song is being played all over the place. It's got some mix. And then now there's like a dance to it. But it is really cool to see.
Oh, I got to check that out.
And it's the easiest dance too. And some of those dances I look at and I can't do. But it's like that song, Mike, that remix everywhere, isn't it?
Everywhere.
I'm a Survivor and Neon Moon are probably, other than Walker Hayes' Fancy like the two biggest songs on TikTok.
Fun.
But it's just cool to see. I wouldn't even say every, you know, generation, which I would say like 10 years, but it's like you just stay relevant.
And if someone comes to you and says, you know, what's the key to staying? What? How do you do it?
How do I do
it? How do you
do it? I don't do it. I don't do nothing. I've got a great team that come up. They're young. They can think of great things for me to do. And I just go do it. And thank God fans like that thought it was interesting enough to sit on a toilet seat and change the roll of toilet paper and then turn into Reba and good job. You know, I'm a survivor. It's just cute things like that. I'm very flattered. More than anything, the songwriters. I mean, I text them and I sent the TikTok over to them saying, look what's going on for y'all's song. So it's something we can all can share and celebrate with, but it is so good. And it proves one thing, a great song will live forever.
The you did a whole album with different remixes on it.
Yeah.
Was the remix album inspired by it kind of blowing up again, or were you already in the works with that before it blew up on TikTok?
Cindy Mabe came up with the idea of revisiting the catalog. And so their team, my team, they all got together and started coming up. I mean, the first time we all sat at a long conference table and they were telling me the ideas, was that 2 years ago or a year ago?
At least two
when we could without masks. And I was like, oh, crap, they're serious. They've got a lot of ideas here. And after the first 50, I was like, man, this is cool. And after that, I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to be way busier than I want to be probably. But they were coming up with all these ideas and then the three albums and three ways of doing fancy. And I thought it was just genius. And so here we are promoting it now.
Did you feel precious about, okay, I know you want to remix these songs, but to a lot of people, these songs, you know, define, you know, different parts of their life. Or were you like, hey, have at it. I'm curious to see what you guys do with the remix.
The latter. I was saying go for it. Then when they said I'm a survivor as a dance mix, I said, really? But it turned out great.
It's fun to look at your top streaming songs. Fancy's number one. Of all the, when we went through all the different services, kind of added them all up, Fancy's number one. And I never, and I'm sure that you've heard this many times, whenever I was singing Fancy as a kid, I never really knew what Fancy was about until I got to be an adult. And then when I found out what Fancy was about, I was like, wow, I've been singing that song a little too passionately. Like, because I was singing it hard. Uh-huh. I mean, I was really into it. And then it's like one day you just go, oh, huh, how about that?
How about that? Yeah, the little girl coming to school and wanting to sing Fancy for the talent night. And she goes, do you know what this is about? She's, yeah, she gets a brand new red dress from her mama. Okay.
Then, okay. And then, okay, if that's what you think it's about, that's great.
Have at it.
So when you recorded that song, was there any talk with your team, like, ooh, this is kind of an area that we're going to be singing about that maybe isn't talked about a whole lot in contemporary country music?
Well, when I was with Jimmy Bowen in the 80s, he said, is there a song you want to do a remix on? And I said, yeah, Fancy. He said, oh, woman, you don't need to be doing that. That's about a prostitute. I said, I'm totally aware of that. And so when I went with Tony Brown in 1990, he said, would you like to do a song again? And I said, Fancy. He said, oh, my gosh, that's my favorite song. So we did it.
So it had been discussed years earlier.
Uh-huh.
And you decided not to cover it.
Well, then, I was vetoed.
Yeah.
It was like, nope, can't do that.
Well, whenever The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, which I know that song because of Mama's Family and then, you know, doing research on her and realizing Vicky. She was a singer. Yeah, Vicki Lawrence.
Yeah.
When you do that song, was it similar or did you go, we're just going to do it and right away?
Same thing. Tony said, is there another song you'd like to do a remix, to do it again? And I said, yeah, that's The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. And you know, Vicki, that was her one and only song she recorded, went number one. Isn't that amazing?
Do you have a conversation with a person if they're alive? Like, did you talk to Vicki?
I did.
And what was her thoughts? Like, have at it?
Oh, she was thrilled to death, yeah. But it was after I did it when I talked to her. Remember, she had that talk show,
mm-hmm.
TV talk show, and I went on and visited with her, and we sang it together on the show.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I would assume even for you that would be pretty cool, and you get to do everything cool.
Oh, everything I get to do cool, I am thrilled to death about it. I don't take it for granted.
Still after all this time?
Yeah.
You're not jaded?
Oh, no, no. When I got to do the video with Dolly Parton, I was like, I was the biggest fan in the room.
You know, it's wild to hear someone who I look at as being the greatest, you.
Oh.
And to look at Dolly at the greatest.
She is.
And to know that you would walk into a room with her and be like, in awe.
Yeah.
When you moved to Nashville, Where was was Dolly available when you moved to Nashville? Or was she in L.A.? Was she in that phase?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
I don't know. First time I saw Dolly was September 17th, 1977.
You remember
the
year?
In person.
You remember the year and the day?
The day, the hour. I was going to go on and do my first performance at the Grand Ole Opry. And they came up and said, we're going to take one of your songs away from you. You'll only do one. And I said, why? I said, well, Dolly Parton just pulled in the parking lot. And I said, well, she can take both of them. Can I meet her? And she walked by in this chiffon black pantsuit and had those rhinestone butterflies on and this big cotton candy hair. I thought, man, that must be what angels look like. That was the most beautiful woman I ever saw in my life.
And did you say hello?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I was backed up against the wall like everybody else was. I mean, they said, part the waves, Dolly's coming in. And I slammed back up against that wall and just watched. I don't think her feet touched the ground. She was an angel.
And when did you guys have your first, you know, where we kind of do the same thing experience?
Years later. Yeah. And then she came on the Reba TV show and we got to spend the whole week together. That was precious. I absolutely love that. Priceless.
I just look at you two as cut out of the same cloth. We are as country as can be.
Yep.
You have ambitions that are bigger than just singing country music. Although that's your most important, that's your pillar.
Mm-hmm.
You have ambitions other than just that. And you both did it at a really high level.
Yeah.
And I would think that hopefully she would be someone, same thing with like Taylor to you. You know, with some of these other artists who are doing that, that you could reach out to after a point and get advice from her. Did that ever happen? Where you reach out and were like, Dolly, you know, can I pick your brain at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have done that. I did that in the early 90s, a phone call, and she took my call. Matter of fact, I called her. She was at, I think, Caesars in Vegas, and I was in Bakersfield somewhere, and I needed a piece of advice from her. And she was on the Tonight Show the night before. And she said she's going to Vegas, won't be at Caesars. So I call Caesars.
But you actually called the casino?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I said, I need to speak to Dolly Parton, please. She said, one moment, please. Who's calling? I said, Reba McEntire. And pretty soon Dolly came on the line. She said, is this really Reba McEntire or some squirrel that wishes she was Reba McEntire? I said, it's me.
That's funny to think about. We used to have to call. I mean, I haven't thought about having to do that where you just had to call a place to get someone. You used to have to call a restaurant and be like, hey, is my uncle there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like back in the day.
Yeah.
I want to play a little clip of Does He Love You? This is you and Dolly. Let me hear this here.
Oh, does he love you?
Does he love you?
Like he loves me.
Like he loves me.
Does he think of you?
Does he think of you?
When he's holding me.
How cool is that to hear, even though you've heard it 10,000 times?
Yeah, you're right, because when we first heard it, Dave Cobb was the one that produced this one, and when we were going down the list of all the songs and listening to them, and Does He Love You came up, and I sat there and listened. I said, play it again, and we listened to it again. It was just the best.
Can I ask about the original version? Because from me moving to Nashville, I've gotten to know Linda, Hillary's mom.
Yeah.
Pretty well. Like,
yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
But I remember watching on CMT you guys' video. It was one of the video that and probably Prop Me Up Beside the Jukebox When I Die are probably the two that I really, you know, remember and think about from kind of that part of my life. But originally, I had read that you thought maybe Wynonna would be the one. But Linda killed it, singing it. And you're like, we have to go with that. Is that story true?
Well, partially. Linda was on the road with me. She and Hillary's dad, Langscott, they were on the road with me, and I thought, Linda, we could do this every night on stage because she's a backup singer. I was featuring her on some songs because she had a record deal. And so Tony said, the record label, of course, wanted either Trisha or Wynonna. And I said, but it's right here. It's so handy. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, let's keep working on it. And I said, well, in the meantime, while I'm recording it, can Linda just step in and do the other part so I have somebody to sing against? They said, okay. And when she got through, Tony said she got the part.
Did you tell her then, hey, you're just going to sing this as kind of a demo version?
Yeah.
Do you think in her mind she was like, I'm going to sing this so good that hopefully they can't refuse it?
You know, Linda is so honest and so innocent. She was just probably glad to be there and just... I don't know what was in her mind, but I knew she would kill the song. Love it. And, you know, all Linda has to do is sing, and she sells herself. It's wonderful.
Did you know that Dolly would say yes if you asked her to do that?
No.
Did you worry she wouldn't say yes?
Yeah, that's why I said managers talk to managers.
Yeah.
I didn't want to put Dolly on the spot. Besides, I don't have her phone number. So I thought it would be a good idea just to go. And that way she had an out if she didn't want to do it.
The new box set, Revived, Remixed, Revisited, is out now. That is on the box set. Yeah, you're also doing the Christmas in Tune, which is the Lifetime movie. Where does acting rank on your passions now?
I love to act. I don't like to sit around, hurry up and wait. I don't like that part of it. But I'm doing several episodes of Young Sheldon on CBS. I love to do that. I love the acting. I love the preparation. I love to memorize my lines. I like almost all of it. I like the being an executive producer. I like being at the beginning. I like to rewrite. And if they let me do that once in a while, and they were really nice on Christmas in Tune to let me do that. Rex helped me tremendously, my boyfriend, Rex Lynn. He'd make me rehearse every day. I knew not only my lines, but I knew everybody else's lines, because he would be every other character and I'd be me. So it was fun. I was very prepared for that role.
Whenever you started to do Reba, your television series, did you guys get a straight deal or did you do a pilot and then the pilot got picked up? Do you remember?
I'm getting them all mixed up, because then we did Malibu Country. I was in the midst of doing Annie Get Your Gun. We went in April. I took 10 days off from Annie Get Your Gun to go to California, shoot the pilot. Then we went to Upfronts, which is in May, and I had done 8 shows that week. I got Monday off. Tuesday morning was Upfronts, so I had to be butt crack of dawn over there. And they changed the name 3 times. When we filmed the show for the pilot, it was the script was called Sally. And Narva went to him and said, you know, if you did the afternoon filming as Sally and then in front of the audience, tape it and Reba be Reba instead of Sally, then let's see how that tests out. And they said, okay. So the title went from Sally. By the time I got to Upfronts, it was Deep in the Heart, because we were all from Houston, Texas, and we were the Hart family. So then there came out this thing on USA Today that their publicist had said why the WB had ever hired Reba McEntire for this part is ridiculous. She's not of our, people that watch.
Like our demo?
Yeah, she's not our demographics. And so the head of the company called by the time we got back to the hotel after Upfronts and said, terribly sorry, terribly sorry. What can we do to make up for this? Well, I'd already gone back to bed. I had a performance that night. So Narva was talking to her, and he heard me get up and go to the bathroom and out of the other room. And he said, hang on, let me put Reba on the line. He banged on the bathroom door and said, pick up the phone. I said, hello. He said, we're terribly sorry what happened and what was in the USA Today. What can we do to make this up to you? And I was half asleep, and I said, she said, well, Narvel said if we call it Reba, you'll be happy with that. And I said, that's a wonderful idea. Thank you. Hung up, went back to bed. So that's how I got the name Reba.
And so did you move out to L.A.?
Uh-huh.
Because it was that, like you said, hey, I just got to go. If I'm going to do this, I don't need to visit it. I need to go live it.
Oh, we were there 3 weeks. So what happened was I got through with Annie Get Your Gun on June 23rd. We went to Ireland for a vacation. I did 5 weeks all-girl tour and then went to L.A., found an apartment, a condo we lived in for the first season, because you never know.
Right.
It could go 13 weeks and you don't get picked up. But then we got picked up on the back nine. And then Narvel went house hunting and we bought a house. And we were there for 6.5 seasons.
Did that ever feel like home out there?
Oh, yeah. I loved living in L.A. I'd love to go back and do another show.
Would you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Have you guys, you know, explored different versions of that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been close?
Uh-huh. Real close.
Have you shot a pilot to anything?
Yeah. The Mark Cherry pilot. We did one called Oxblood, and they passed on it.
It's always a weird thing, because I've shot a few pilots and had it passed on, where you feel like everybody's so pumped about it.
Yeah.
And everybody loves it, but then might have been talk shows. And like, oh, this is it. Research has been great.
Yeah.
It's tested so wonderfully. Well, let's spend some money. Well, it just right now. Well, right. So uh-huh. That show's done.
That show's done, okay. Unfortunately, which I thought it was going to, you know, mm-hmm. last forever. I thought I'd retire off of that show.
Well, I mean the Oxblood, that show.
That's it.
Yeah,
Yeah. Mark Cherry.
Yeah.
I love his show now, Why Women Kill. It's just, he is a genius.
I saw my wife watching that show one day, and I was like, why are you watching? Why? I don't know what it was about.
Just all exactly what was, are your yes, motives?
Like, why are we learning from this
and
show?
And what's the notepad, and you're taking
yes,
notes.
Yes. What, my favorite duet in country music. The Cowgirls Don't Cry. That song to me, I think, is the saddest. We're in the land of sad songs. I mean, we have the format of the greatest sad songs of all time because I think we have the format of the realest songs of all time. Cowgirls Don't Cry. That song to me, and maybe it's because I just didn't have a dad growing up. Maybe it hits me like that. And yeah. I'm not a cowgirl, but yeah. You know, there's that relationship. Like yeah. when you heard that song, like, were you moved?
Oh, yes. Because I am a cowgirl, and my daddy was a cowboy, and a very strict cowboy. And so when we do that song on stage in Vegas, there is a huge screen behind the stage, behind the setup. And I'm walking on stage for my part, and Ronnie and Kix are already out there, and I happen to look up and see that cowboy. I barely got my notes out. It choked me up so bad.
I mean, that song still does it. Anytime we do... Or anytime someone's interviewing me about country music and they're talking about emotion and song, like that's the one I still go to after all these years. And, yeah. And you know, we could list 50 great sad songs. But that one to me, and maybe it's the time of when it comes and how it hits me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even a cowgirl. Like I said, I have no cowgirl in me. I was talking to my wife. She's an Okie. And... she was talking about how all the towns in Oklahoma are, a lot of them are set in different ways. And she was talking about, it's not Miami, Oklahoma, it's Miami, Oklahoma, uh-huh. Right. And so you were born in, say it for me, is it Chalky?
I was born in McAllister.
Okay.
I went to school at Kiowa.
Kiowa is the town she was talking about. Yeah. It's said two different ways.
Yep, not Kiowa, it's Kiowa. That's the way we say it.
Okay.
And the Kiowa Indians. And then I lived in Chalky, and... then I lived, before I left Oklahoma, lived in Stringtown, just keep going south, but I went to college for 3.5 years in Durant.
That's a lot of Oklahoma.
There's a lot of towns that I kind of help represent.
What town, I guess they probably all feel like they're your town. Like when you go, do they all represent you in some way?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Girlhood home, born uh-huh. here, went to college here.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty cool.
It is cool. And I go back. I go back quite often, probably will more in the future. Mom and daddy worked real, real hard to gain a lot of land, buy a lot of property. And so they split it four ways between us kids. And now we are managing our own properties. And it's a lot of fun.
I'm curious about your mom because from everything I've read about her, she could sing.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted to be a singer, but she ended up being a school teacher and teaching music to kids.
Uh-huh.
Like, did her... desire to be a singer influence your desire to be a singer?
Yes.
Like, did her wants make you want it?
Yes.
How so?
Because when we were rodeoing, we didn't have a radio in the car, and four kids in the back seat wrestling would get on anybody's nerves. And so Mama would get us to sing to keep us out of trouble, keep us occupied. Then first grade, the teacher would say, all right, we're having a Christmas program. Anybody want to sing? And I'd raise my hand. And Mama would encourage me on that. Just like she did Paik, Alice, and Susie. And so when we got in the high school, junior high years, they formed a little country western band. And we played at the football games and had little concerts. And then when I went on to college, Mama made sure I took 18 hours to keep me out of trouble.
That's a lot of hours. That will keep you out of trouble.
It didn't. But they were mostly music classes. And so when I went to the National Finals Rodeo in Oklahoma City in 74, I was a sophomore. Daddy knew I was up there partying, having a good time, and he said, won't you get you a job while you're up there? And I thought, shoot, that would interfere with all my fun. I said, doing what? And he said, sing the national anthem. And that's when Red Steigall heard me. So fast forward, that was in December 74, 75. He said, Jack, bring Reba down, and we'll cut a demonstration tape. I didn't really want to. I didn't know anybody in the music business. I had all my friends in the rodeo. I wanted to be a world champion barrel racer. So about halfway from Oklahoma here, Mama, I said, let's stop here and do this. Mama said, you know, if you don't want to do this, that's fine. Let's just go home. But if you do this, I'll be living all my dreams through you. Mm. I said, well, Thunder, why didn't you say so? Get in the car. Let's go. And when Mama died, I told Susie, because we were cleaning out Mama's house, I said, I don't think I want to do this anymore. She said, why? I said, I was doing it for Mama.
When you do it now, are you still doing it for your mom?
Yeah, yeah. But it took me a good 3 months to say, call Susie back and say, okay, I'm back. I'll do it.
Wow. Your dad, I'm assuming he instilled the work ethic that you must have to get to this point. Like, I'm assuming your dad was like, this is A to B, we do the hard work.
Yeah.
Because you living on a ranch, what kind of work was there to do around the place?
Oh, before school, we'd get up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
And Paik and I would go out and catch probably 4 to 5 horses out in a 40-acre pasture that were frisky because it was September. And then we'd have to saddle them up and cinch them up. They'd kind of walk back, step on your feet, and then we'd go in. Daddy'd have breakfast cooked, and Mom would be in there getting ready for work because she was the superintendent's assistant secretary. And so we would go start gathering one end and then bring them all down to the pens. Mom would stay there at the scale, and she'd weigh them. We'd put them on the trucks, and then we'd go to school.
That's before school.
Yeah.
That's a day's work before school.
Yeah. That wasn't all the time. That was in the fall. And in the spring, we would get cattle in, and we'd have to work them. You know, vaccinate them, dehorn them, castrate them, brand them, and then put them out in one pasture and make sure they're all right to go into the bigger pasture and then put them up in the hills.
All those same things have been done to me since I got married a couple months ago. Vaccinated, castrated, all of it. It's, it was wild. It's,
we should have talked earlier.
What's old is new? What's new? Your dad, being a world champion roper, was he practicing a lot? Do you remember him practicing a lot as a kid?
Yeah.
Like, was he
just younger?
Yeah.
And then Grandpap always told us when they were all at home, Daddy would be out there roping. He said, Clark, get out there and rope. You got to practice. And Daddy would practice roping chickens. He'd rope anything.
He would rope chickens.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, and he'd get it done. And so Daddy told us one time that Grandpap said, now, son, if the house catches on fire, me and your ma'll take care of it. You just stay out there at the roping pen and keep practicing. Because Grandpap was a 1934 world champion steer roper.
What is your lineage? Well, where did, your dad, your
Grandpap.
Grandfather,
mm-hmm.
Where did your family come from? Because this is some kind of work ethic. You guys, you can sing, you're athletes, you work hard. Like,
I think it comes from being a survivor. I really do. Daddy didn't rope for the fame. Now, that's pretty much me. I love attention, so I like the fame. I love it. But Daddy, he'd rather been at home. He went out. He could make money by roping and winning ropings. And he would bring the money home. He would make a payment for land and cattle at the bank and pay off the grocery bill. And that was the main two things. Then he'd go do another roping to make more money to buy more land, more cattle.
You say you like fame. When did you feel famous for the first time? Where you're like, oh man, this is a lot of opportunities now that I get to have because of fame.
Right here talking to you.
That's not true. We know that's not true. Because I would have to imagine it's just famous was so different even 10 years ago. Like, I'm just now starting to get my first real experience of going places I've never been and people being like, oh, I recognize you from this TV show or this radio.
Yeah.
And for me, it still hits me a little weird. But there are 10 million famous people now. You can be famous on TikTok. You can be famous on YouTube. But when you were famous, I mean, even in the 90s with Reba the TV show, it was just a different world because there weren't 500,000 famous people. There were kind of just 200 famous people, period. And you were one of them. When for you did you go, wow, I'm actually famous. This is crazy.
When I was ordering something on the telephone before internet.
That's crazy.
And I'm saying, okay, I'd like this rug number N3457. She says, hold on.
They knew you by your voice.
I said,
are you kidding?
You there? Is this Reba McEntire? I hadn't given her my name or anything. I said, yeah, hold on. Okay, I'm back. What else would you like? So I thought, wow, my voice is... But, you know, I can't get a commercial, you know, like, this is the kind of truck you need
like
to drive.
Like a voiceover, yeah.
Yeah, a voiceover. I've done movies, you know, in cartoons, animation, which I love to do that.
I was talking to Clarence whenever you were doing the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah.
The Colonel Sanders. And he had mentioned to me that there was so much that went into even you getting dressed as Colonel Sanders because they have very strict protocol at what Colonel Sanders can wear, can look like. And I was like, really? Even Reba as Colonel Sanders? They're like, oh, yeah, it needs to be exactly like this. Like, that was like that, but that seemed like a commercial that would be a lot of work. It was super cool.
It was fun.
But I got to imagine if you have to abide by the Colonel Sanders handbook of, you know, exact living, that's probably a lot leading into a shoot just of hair and makeup, right?
The thing I remembered more than anything is the length of the fringe. Could we put rhinestones and fringe on my outfit?
Like, was it a question of would they allow it?
Yeah, would they allow it? Mm. And they did. They approved it. And then I had to get my mustache and my beard all, I had to get fitted for my beard. That's weird. And then my hair piece. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
I just imagine there's a team with a bunch of clipboards walking around you with chicken going, all right, this is not work. We got to, the ears are too high.
Yeah.
Did you do that whole campaign before you announced it? So was that one you had to keep secret or no?
Do you remember?
Because I remember when it was announced, everybody kind of flipped out a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that an automatic yes from you, or did someone have to convince you?
No. Clarence came to me, and I said, oh, I don't know about that. And then he presented it to his son, Aaron, who's a little younger than Shelby, my son. And Aaron said, that's the coolest thing ever. Okay, I'll do it. Because you know how your generation might think about it, but what would the next two or three generations below think about it, younger? And when Aaron said, oh, man, that's the coolest thing ever, I thought, okay, that's hip. I'll do it.
Do they give you any sort of chicken for life? Or
no.
I'm sure they give you enough money to buy chicken for life, but is there any sort of... I'm sure that's not a cheap get.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I really liked you as Colonel Sanders.
Thanks. I had a blast doing it. And what the great thing about it is you only do it once. Then they find somebody else the next time. So it's a one-time thing.
Did you have to do a bunch of different shoots over weeks, or did you go in for like a few days and do it all at the same
time?
Just
1 week.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I will always remember that for years and years.
Yeah.
You as Colonel Sanders. The last show you watched and you thought, I can't wait to see the next episode. Can you like right now, are you watching anything where you're just like, what is the next?
Absolutely. Ted Lasso. I'm so into that show. I love it. It's really goofy, silly, but lots of heart. And it makes you feel good.
Yeah, Ted Lasso. And they're not done yet this season. There's still more to come.
Yay.
Do you like when shows are coming out each week, or do you like when you can binge it all?
Binge.
Me too.
I love to binge.
And Ted Lasso, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Let's go. We're watching Only Murders in the Building right now with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
And it comes out every week.
Yeah.
And it's so good, but I'm like, I would like to see them all, please.
It's true. One I'm really excited about, Ozark comes back.
Mm, the last season.
Uh-huh. Succession
comes back. October, right? Mm-hmm.
Peaky Blinders comes back. And I have so many favorites that I absolutely knocked out of the ballpark when during COVID. You know, you could just sit and watch and binge. And I went back. Rex hadn't seen Boardwalk Empire, so we started that one over again. I just love it.
Are you able, or do you ever just go into Starbucks and get a coffee?
Well,
you.
Yeah.
You can just go into Starbucks and you have.
Grocery shopping, everything.
You're telling me that you will just go to the grocery store?
Yep, by myself.
At 2 a.m.?
Oh, no. No.
Are you sick?
Thursdays, did you know?
Hold on a minute.
Did you know Thursdays and Wednesdays are the best time to go to the grocery store?
Why are they?
Because that's when they restock.
You will just get in your car and go to the grocery store?
Yeah.
And do you feel like you can, for the most part, grocery shop and people are just cool?
Yeah.
And they'll let you grocery shop?
I got to tell you the funniest story the other day happened. I was checking out, and the grocery sack girl was sitting there, and she was going through all the stuff, and she was narrating and commenting on everything that I had bought. And she picks up a bottle of Beano. She said, is this for you? I said, yeah, it is. She said, well, does it work? Everybody in line. I looked at everybody and said, works. Great advertisement right here. Just throw it in the bag if you would.
You had to love, and not for the reason, but to wear a mask, though, people probably didn't know it was you a lot of the time.
A lot of the times until I talk, they don't. And I will stop and ask other people shopping, do you have any idea where so-and-so is? And they'll go, are you Reba McEntire? Yeah. Are you really? You're out shopping? Yeah. You know where the baking soda is? They say, yeah, it's right down that aisle. Say, okay, thanks.
I'm curious about the Grand Ole Opry, and for a lot of reasons. One, my grandmother raised me for a lot of my life, and so that's what we did. We watched it on TNN or whatever channel it was on, because it's kind of had its different, you know, iterations of being on television. Mostly for me, it was TNN back in the day. But when you were inducted, how about invited into the Grand Ole Opry, which are two big things, but they're different. Do you remember your invitation into the Grand Ole Opry when they said, Reba, we would like for you to be a member?
No. I don't. I do remember in 84 when I got inducted.
So who inducted you? Do you remember that night? And was it just, because I will go now and some of my friends are getting inducted and it's like the coolest thing and I'm so proud for them. And it's a massive deal. What was it like when you were inducted?
I got to stand on that circle. I was really thrilled because I'd gotten to stand on the circle September 17th, 77. Now, Bobby, the reason I remember that date so well is because 30 years prior, Daddy won the all-around at the Pendleton, Oregon Roundup.
And then you remember this next day, it being like the anniversary of it, the same day that you saw.
Yeah. So being the day that I got inducted wasn't as huge a time as it was in September, because Mom and Daddy and Alice drove from Oklahoma just to be there with me. My first time, we'd been to the Grand Ole Opry at the Ryman lots of times. That was our only vacation. But when we pulled up to the gate, Daddy rolled down his window and said, got Reba McEntire. She's going to sing on the Opry tonight. And the gentleman looked on his clipboard and he said, oh, no, she's not. They said, yeah, she is. He said, well, she's not on this clipboard. She's not going to be. I said, Daddy, let's just go across the interstate to that get and go, and I'll call Shorty and Dick. That was Shorty Lavender and Dick Blake, who were my booking agents, got me on the gig. So I went over there and I put my quarter in and I called. I think it was Dick, and I said, they won't let me in. He said, you just go right back over there, and I'm terribly sorry this happened. So Daddy pulls up and rolls down his window, and he says, yes, Mr. McEntire, go right over here on number 67. You can park right there. Oh, glad to see y'all. So that was a night we'll never forget. And then I get one of my songs bumped because Dolly's there, but we're still thrilled. Throwing babies in the air. We just loved it.
I think I've done stand-up at the Opry probably 20 times. I produced the TV show, and I'm going to get to the story where you come in, and I now tell the story. I've told it a couple times at the Opry, but you were maybe a month and a half ago, you were performing at the Opry, and then there was a changeover, and then you performed on an NBC special.
Yeah.
And so I'd done stand-up earlier, and they said, hey, go fill some time in between Reba's changeover. I was like, oh, cool, no problem. So I go, and I'm doing some jokes. It's hard for me to write new jokes because you can't practice them in front of people, right? Because the pandemic has allowed me to do no touring. Jokes aren't like songs. I can't practice in my room. I could say them, but unless people are laughing, you don't know if it's funny.
Yeah.
And so I'm up, and they're like, okay, Reba's going to be like a minute. And so I do another joke. And then you come, you're on the side stage, and you look at me, and you point at me. And for some reason, I thought you were about to invite me into the Grand Ole Opry. And I remember going, oh, this is it. Because between all my performances, I've probably been on that stage 200 times. Yeah. Between hosting the TV show, all during the pandemic. And like, it's been a dream. And you pointed at me as you were coming onto the stage to do your second thing. And for some reason, I thought it was an extra sincere point. And inside of me went, oh, I'm about to be invited to become a member of the Opry. And you came closer and you were like, hey, thanks. La, la, la. And I was ready for you. And you said, okay, I'll go. And I was like, okay. And I walked off. And I was like, well, that did. Instead of that just happened, I was like, well, that didn't just happen.
Didn't just happen.
I did. And so.
Well, I wished it had been that.
You know what? I think it's a better story that it hasn't yet. But for a split second, I thought Reba was inviting me to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry. And my life was perfect. For that second, my life was perfect. Where does your love of corn dogs come from?
County fairs, state fairs. That's it.
I see the meme.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
I love corn dogs.
I mean, I see the meme of you with a corn dog in a private jet, like the living the life meme. That's what that is. You with a corn dog in a private jet is like nothing else could be better than this moment.
Yeah.
and to be memed itself one time. You're memed in every way, all these positive ways. It's the most amazing thing. Mm. Did someone come to you and go, Reba, you're now a corndog meme?
No. No, I found it out by somebody. Somebody did come to me and tell me that. You're exactly right, yes.
I want to do a thing, and then I do want to get back into the music for a second, but I want to do an urban legends thing about you, because there are so many things that you hear and you go, is it true or isn't it true? Once I heard you died. This season on this, there was a big...
Fell off a mountain.
Yeah, I think you had to even come out and say you didn't die.
Yep, I did.
Which is a weird conversation to have with people.
Yeah, my nephew was in Arkansas traveling, and he walked into a convenience store, and everybody was saying, Reba McEntire just got killed. She fell off a mountain. He went running to a phone to call his mama, my sister. Said, hey, Ma died. What happened? And she said, oh, no, I'd have been the first one to find that out. Nope, she's fine.
And that's a weird thing to go, I'm not dead. Look at me.
Yeah.
How did that even start? Somebody just on Twitter?
There was a trend going on there for a while that the fake death announcement.
Okay,
I think it was before Twitter.
Was it?
Yeah.
Here are a few things.
Okay.
Is it true that you were in the running to be in Titanic, the movie?
Yes.
And
I had the part.
You did. And you thought what?
Unsinkable Molly Brown was the part I was going to play. I went audition for James Cameron, and we were back on tour, and they needed like August, September, and October. So we moved our concert to November, December, and then January. And then you start getting all the venues. We were promoting ourselves, and you get all that set, and then they'll come back and go, you know, we're going to have to move it 3 months forward. Well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I've got people that are depending on me for their livelihood. That's their paycheck. And I just said, I got to choose. So I said, sorry, I can't do this to my people. So I turned down that part.
You were a serious, like a really good basketball player when you were younger.
False.
Really?
Well, we didn't have that many people on the team. So I got to play a lot. I was a guard. That was back in the day when it was three on three. Not full court, thank God. But I loved it. I went to basketball camp every summer. That's another place I learned how to volunteer. Coaches love volunteers. I wasn't that good at all. But because I was a volunteer, I stayed on the coach's good side.
There's an urban legend about Faith Hill trying to sing background for you.
She did audition to be a background singer, and she didn't get it. And Narvel and I looked at each other and said, she's going to be a star, big star one day.
So you could see stardom in her, but you didn't think it was that she was right to be a backup singer because she was too big for the job?
No, she could sing. She wasn't that good of a harmony singer at that time. No, wasn't meant to be.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
That you could tell she was going to be a star. And background singing is different than just singing the melody of a song, too.
Totally.
Okay, let's roll through some of this new stuff here, because I have it up. I want our people to hear this so they can check out the box set, so they can check out. We played Does He Love You. Mike, what do we have over there of the remixes?
Ah.
All those on that list right there on the up top.
Okay, here we go. Play me I'm a Survivor, the dance remix.
A single mom who works two jobs, who loves her kids and never stops, with gentle hands and the heart of I'm a survivor.
What do you think about that?
I don't think it's that different.
I don't either. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think it went total Euro, would be what I would be afraid of on that song, or it was just like,
Yeah, there's some of them that it takes 10 minutes to get into the song because of the little hook line that they found. But I enjoyed listening to it. I really did. That's got to be a really special talent. I've never seen anybody do it, but it's got to be a lot of work.
To remix a song?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
it's like me. I'm like, that sounds good, that doesn't, and I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm with you. It's what you like, what you don't.
Fancy. Here's the remix to Fancy.
Okay.
Again.
Yeah, there's some part of that. It's like, yes, she was. Yes, she was. Charmed a queen, charmed a king, a congressman. And there's some that they put back in, and the video's pretty funny, too. Somebody did a video of the remix.
One more. Let's do Consider Me Gone.
Okay.
This is the revisited.
If you think you can do better than this, then I guess
let's not drag this on. Consider me gone.
What do you hear different about that?
It's relaxed. It's mellow. It's not so confrontational.
It feels like the percussion on it, too, is much, it's a little softer.
Oh, very
soft.
Sounds
very Cajon, more Cajon-y.
It was.
Than it is a snare. And a, yeah. That's, well, the first time I heard it, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah, that was Dave Cobb. And we had five musicians, and they'd bring in a fiddle player or a steel guitar player for a specialty. And it was just so relaxed. The difference in Consider Me Gone on what you just heard and the original, the original was more in-your-face screaming. You know, how dare you?
Sure.
You're an idiot. And this one's kind of like, you know, this is not working out. Let's just take a nap. It's just so much more mature. It's not throwing a fit. It's just, I like it better.
The new box set, Revived, Remixed, Revisited, is available now. The Dolly Does He Love You remake is also on this box set. The Lifetime movie Christmas in Tune premieres on November 26th. I'd like to ask about one more song.
Okay.
Being from Arkansas. Little Rock was played everywhere.
Yeah.
This song, I was a kid. I remember hearing it on the radio probably more than anywhere else because it was us.
Sure.
This song about us. So when someone wants to name check a city, and Mike, you can play that. I would have to imagine in a song where you name check a city and you get to play in that city, everybody's just waiting to hear the song about their town.
They go wild.
Like, right?
Can you imagine being so stupid not to play Little Rock when you played Little Rock?
Even if you took it off your set list later, you have to put it back on, right?
Absolutely.
When you go back to Little
Everybody
Rock.
Everybody, refresh your memory.
What has been so close? Because I came out and watched you and Kix and Ronnie in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
What's that relationship been like? And why, after all these years, are you guys still together and still doing these shows together?
We grew up together. We toured three or four times in the 90s. They opened the show for me the first time we toured. And then we were, you know, co-headlining and having fun and playing pranks on each other and going on vacations together and hanging out. It was just a great relationship. They're not my brothers. We're very close. Our children grew up together, and we're just buds.
Are you sad to see that run come to an end?
Because yes.
You guys are about to finish up these shows.
Yeah, I'm very sad about it. It was the gig of a lifetime. You got to stay in this nice suite. You got to perform on this absolutely incredibly well lit, and the sound was incredible. Stage, restaurants over the chart. People came from all over the world to come see you, and it was a consistency that we're not familiar with. We're used to three different cities, three different days, and to get to do that, and they could go play golf, Ronnie could go off and take pictures, I could stay upstairs and play all the games I wanted and with my family and friends. It was a dream job.
Were there any parallels in that job and when you did Annie Get Your Gun, because you're playing in the same theater? You're not touring, you know. Did you have to do two shows a day ever when you were? Because I had friends that did shows on Broadway, and they were like, man, we'd have off a Monday, but then we're doing two shows, you know, on weekends.
Two shows on Wednesday, two shows on Saturday. You had Monday off. Eight shows a week. Hardest job I ever had in my life.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. The only parallel, the similarity, but to, I was in the same hotel room, I was in the same dressing room and the same stage.
Did that make you want to do more on Broadway or less?
Well, I asked Carol Burnett that. I said, do you think you'll ever do another Broadway play? She said, sure, only if I can do the matinees. Only. I thought, well, I like that woman.
Man, the fact that you bring up Carol Burnett, too. Just a hero to me as someone who loves comedy.
Me, too. Love her.
Just the best.
Yeah.
Just the best. Well, Reba, I appreciate you coming by. You have, again, I am, what amazes me the most and what I see other artists try to emulate is just almost being ubiquitous with the time always. Like it's every few years there's something else that is new Reba. And it's not you just going, here's old Reba, let's make old Reba cool again. It's like new Reba is always cool. And
thanks.
So you have, I don't know if they've told you this. You have it. I don't know what it is. Your people may not. I'm going to identify it. You're not right for this job, but you have it. I'm going to do you like you did Faith. You're going to be a star, Reba. You're just the best, and I appreciate you coming over and you know, just being you. Mike, is there anything you'd like to say?
I think you're the only other person that I know who is a fan of the game Phase 10.
So, love Phase 10.
Is that
10.
One of your favorite games to play?
It is one of my favorites. I'm into Rummy Cube now also, and a new one called Sky Joe.
I have to check those out.
Yeah.
Me and my wife play those. And I'm like, you know, the only other person who likes this is Reba.
Reed, I'm a game player. I love games.
Reed, one question from you. You said something that you were going to ask Reba if you had a chance. Do you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah. Your cameo in The Little Rascals changed my life.
Are you kidding? AJ Ferguson?
I grew up on that movie. I can remember being at my grandma's. And I would eat strawberry ice cream and watch that movie nonstop.
That is too cute.
Nonstop.
People recognize you from everything.
I was there for one day to shoot, and I was hearing all the stories. You know, after the kids would do their line one time, they don't want to do it again. You know, they were like, I'm going to play. Okay, I'll give you a piece of candy. And then it got to, I'll give you a dollar if you just say that line one more time. But they said that it was a really fun time to get to do the movie, to do the remake of Little Rascals. But you're right. Of all the movies I've ever done, Tremors and Little Rascals are the two that I get recognized and talked about more.
Oh, man.
And I bet you can tell what the person's going to recognize you from. Again, we talk about demos. Like, almost if they're a fan of your music or if they're a fan of the TV show, if they say, hey, I'm a big fan, you can kind of go, oh, I bet you're a fan of this.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I will let you go, but thank you so much. She's got so much out. We'll talk about it again in a second. But if it's music, it's the Christmas movie, it's Dolly, it's the shows with Brooks and Dunn.
New tour next year.
Are we talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then what's happening?
Well, starting in January, we'll be going out on tour, the Reba Tour, me and the band, which we were supposed to do in 2020.
You're doing the tour that got delayed.
Right.
You know what I thought was cool is when you put out the YouTube concert of the tour of your shows from back in the day. I thought that was so cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was just a brilliant idea. I watched the whole thing.
I didn't come up with that. I can't take credit, but I think it was Justin that came up with it, Justin McIntosh, and we had it. And why not get it and, you know, get it ready and put it out on television? Let people know that, you know, we have been doing this a while. In a way, that's bad because the first one was pretty poor quality, not up to standards that we see today. Second one was a lot better, but I was still very proud of it.
When you're out on tour, and we will end with this, she'll be out January, do you feel like you've put an unhealthy expectation of you having to wear all the great clothes all the time?
Yes.
Don't you ever just want to go in sweats and be like, yes, I'm going to sing you 8 songs in sweats?
I'll never forget seeing Shania Twain come out. I wasn't there in person, but I saw it. And she had those fluffy little workout pants on and tennis shoes and her hair up in a ponytail. And I was like, I'm way overthinking this. And she had all her dancers bebopping around, and it was so cool. And I thought, man, why didn't I think of that?
Okay, thank you, Reba.
Thank you, Bobby. Right. Nice to see all of you.
That was awesome.